Welcome to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by the Sophie Health Team with founder Kaveh Mamari, herbalist Pamela Spence, and evangelist Vincent Boone. Together, we explore the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.health, reconnecting people and plants.
Welcome to the show. We're really excited to be back this week, and we look forward to the next chapter in our series. Last week, we explained what Sophie.health is all about, our inspiration, our vision, and the work we're doing to support people living with the fallout of high stress levels, particularly looking at anxiety and sleeplessness.
We each spoke about how we came to be part of this team and what Sophie means for us. For Kaveh, our illustrious founder, his very personal inspiration and drive to help. For Pamela, our herbalist on the team, how Sophie challenges what she knows about the plants he loves, and myself, Vincent, and my drive to see the consumer as a central part to everything we do, and how I help implement that through our online community of pioneers.
Now, if you missed any of that, then please visit our Listen on Demand show page and tune into episode 1. So the three of us made it back, and we have something exciting to share with you. Before we get to today's guest speaker, it occurred to us that at Sophie.health, we now have new members in our growing community, and that's you, the UK Health listener. And we'd love to invite you in. So we've created a landing page just for you to show you how you can become a part of what we're doing. The link is join.sophie.health/radio. And if you decide to fully take part in the Sophie journey, we've also created a discount code, which is Radio50. The code gives you 50% of the price of the Sophie pod, which is the piece of hardware, the smart spray you need to deliver the plant extracts or the plant formulations in Sophie. And that's what connects to your Sophie app and records your results in real time. We'll remind you all about that at the end of the show. And now, a little about today's guest speaker, Evie.
Evie is a remarkable young woman who's become a voice for those struggling with anxiety because her own experience in early life gave her a unique insight into those challenges, and they allow her to do that with compassion and understanding. At Sophie, she is our voice of the pioneers, the people testing the Sophie system and how it can affect things like anxiety and sleeplessness.
At 15 years old, she became the youngest student to be the voice of the learner at her college, a title she held close to her heart, and she worked very hard to make changes that benefited her fellow pupils. Now at 17, she's studying psychology in the hopes to get deeper understanding of the complex world that is our mind.
Since she was a young child, Evie struggled with severe anxiety, which she says has limited many of her experiences growing up. After many years of self-management and professional CBT, Evie learned how to live alongside her anxiety and now wants to help others, young and old, to ensure that they can thrive, just as she would have loved to do with her younger self. She strongly believes that Sophie would have been a saving grace for her younger self and agrees that it could have been a great assistance during those difficult years.
And of course, there's one more thing about Evie, in that she may very well be and is, as the founder, I can say, confirmed the original inspiration that helped me to found Sophie. In fact, maybe Sophie by any other name might have been called Evie. Although they say you can never connect the dots forward, you just understand them when you look back. Now it's down to her that we're all here exploring the challenges and techniques and insights that can help you better manage anxiety, stress, and sleeplessness. If you want to hear more about my inspiration behind Sophie, of course, you can go to our show page and listen on demand to episode 1, where I talk about my very personal mission behind this. But of course, today is all about Evie, the original Sophie.
Evie, welcome to the show. We're so happy you're here with us. The first time I heard you speak, when the Sophie team got together, about 40 strong, and we all introduced ourselves, You absolutely blew me away, and I'm so glad that you agreed to join us, and also even more that you'll be with us every week as of the Sophie Pioneer community, and those people who are testing out the Sophie system. So first of all, though, today is all about you before you take up that role as part of the team going forward with the show. So can you tell us what it was like as a young person to live with anxiety and sleeplessness?
Yeah, of course. I mean, firstly, thank you for having me on here. It's genuinely an honour. I love everything about this project. I think it's great and I can't wait to see where it goes. So yeah, I've been living with anxiety and sleeplessness for genuinely as long as I can remember. One of my earliest memories was probably attending nursery as a child. I found it incredibly difficult to leave my mum. Every morning would be a battle. It would be tears and a lot of hard work, and it was really hard for me to understand because it was just a lot of emotion for a three-year-old to kind of process. And the school, they also didn't really understand, so that made it even more confusing, really. No one could really tell me kind of what was wrong, because it felt like there was something wrong with me when I could see other children going fine or even enjoy school, and then I was there left in fear. And then this anxiety continued throughout pretty much my whole schooling experiences from the age of 3 to 9. Every morning it would be another near panic attack. It would be the crying, the nausea, the fast heart, the typical anxiety symptoms. I just remember the drives to school, that like the lead up was always so scary. And that is the main thing, I think, as a child. It's terrifying. With anxiety, no one can really get through to you why you feel this fear, because you feel like something so bad is going to happen, but you know deep down nothing will. So it's confusing. And again, the school didn't really and couldn't really communicate this with me. I think when I was growing up, there still maybe wasn't as much knowledge around anxiety. Like, I can see it's growing more and more every day, and I'm hearing kids now kind of get the support that I wish I received, which is absolutely great. Another thing was that the school just, they liked to say things such as like, oh, you're fine, like you'll get through the day, you know, just sit there and it will be fine. But the word fine is so confusing, because you know you don't feel fine, and people just telling you this feeling, which you know is false, makes you kind of think that anxiety is fine, and that's what being fine is. And then it kind of just throws you into this idea of fine isn't fine. Fine will never be okay, and fine is scary. Yeah, so incredibly confusing for little me. My probably biggest advice for anyone who's especially young, a young person struggling with anxiety, is listen to yourself more than anyone else. Don't let anyone else tell you what you are feeling, because more than anyone, you know, you are your mind, you are your body, and you have the right to say, no, this is how I feel. Like, you can't, someone doesn't have that power over you, no matter how powerful they may seem. No one can tell you what is right when you know how you feel is scary. So yeah, definitely stick to your guts with how you're feeling.
Evie, you mentioned when we spoke about this before the show today about physical pain and how that anxiety actually began to manifest in physical ways. Can you talk a little bit about that for me?
Yeah, of course. So this was actually a very massive part. Around the age of 7, I started getting knee pain. It just hurt, and I couldn't explain this hurt. It just hurt. Sometimes it would hurt more, sometimes it would hurt less, but it was just a general ache. And this was like really concerning to my parents, because we were going to different doctors, and none of them could explain what was going on with me. They were all so confused. And then this pain just started manifesting really throughout my whole body. It went to my hips, it went to my back, like everything started to hurt, like not only physically, mentally, everything was just painful around this time. And so we kept going to doctors. No one could explain it, and unfortunately no one really tried to explain it. Instead they were like, oh, here you go, have some crutches. And so I used these crutches, and I think maybe at first it was a bit of a mental crutch. It gave me a bit of, okay, there is something like wrong with me. I'm not just like making it up, because it's also very, very confusing for little me when I was like, this hurts, but I don't know why. I can't see anything as hurting. Doctors are telling me I'm not in pain, but I am. I can feel I'm in pain. And so we went to many specialists, and eventually we went to an amazing specialist who kind of got through to me and was like, look, your pain is real. I know your pain is real, but your pain is mental. And that was very confusing, because you're like, well, if it's mental, then surely it can't be real. But that's just not true. It's so real. It was probably one of the most painful experiences I'd ever have, like more than a broken bone, more than anything, because it's just so confusing. But once this doctor had got through to me and I kind of internalized what he was really saying, it almost got better. Well, it did get better, because I started being like, okay, I know what's going on, and I know what I need to focus on. And it also helped, like, my parents, they knew what to focus on. They were like, okay, we can start encouraging her more on the mental side rather than physically being afraid, because I think at this point they were kind of afraid that if no doctor can find what's wrong, surely there's something very big wrong. And I mean, really, it was one of the biggest things that was wrong, because it's not such a simple fix as putting on a cast. It's something you have to go internal and really look at to try and solve and get to the root of. But once that root was kind of achieved, once I would say the main thing that kind of helped me was my parents decided to homeschool me, something that I'd asked for a very long time. They finally were like, okay, yeah, let's try it out. Once that happened, and once those things were in place, once that just complete stress and anxiety was slightly taken off, well, massively taken off, it alleviated so much pain so quickly, which was just incredible.
Amazing. And I'm just wondering, Kaveh, Evie's talked a little bit about, as a parent in that, what did that feel like?
I mean, first, it's incredible to hear Evie talk about this. Because, you know, as a parent, you don't really get like a how to parent manual, or a, you know, this is how you should not mess up your kid, or, you know, these are the things you should do to be a good parent. You don't really get that. And if you do, I'm sure it probably doesn't apply to your kid. So I would say the first thing was an incredible sense of powerlessness, which is probably very odd for someone who had always told himself that he chooses everything, he controls what he creates, he makes his dreams, he does, like, my disposition has always been one of control, or I am in control, or I can affect change, or I can do the improbable. Of course it's possible. And to come across a situation where you realize none of that makes a difference is, I don't know what to compare it to. So it is extremely humbling. It is very grounding, and it is extremely powerless. And the solutions are, of course, you're not a medical doctor, but when you hear them, you think, for sure, there's got to be a different way. I mean, the last thing you want to do is put a Band-Aid on it, or a chemical Band-Aid, or a crutch. There's got to be a different way. And, you know, the girls grew up in Cornwall, and, you know, for everything that Cornwall is beautiful for, I would say its healthcare program is probably not the most shining example of its, no doubt they work very hard, but I think, you know, especially when it came to mental health issues, it was nearly impossible to get any support. So it's everything that Peanut went, everything that Evie went through, and I'm going to keep on calling her Peanut on this call, is something that totally was alien to what was my own experience of childhood. It was completely different than what I knew was right. And I was completely blindsided by all of it, because I probably lacked the understanding and empathy to really get what was going on. And in fact, as much as I might have tried to help Peanut, I suspect she helped me more in trying to bridge the understanding between what I thought was okay and what was really going on, which was a huge gap. I think without fail, I would say that maybe I wasn't the only parent in that relationship. I think Evie at the age of 7 or 8 parented me a little bit through parenting her through that, which is just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, something that Evie said earlier really struck me when she said, you know, there's little to no support at school. And, you know, you kind of were talking about how there is a little bit more now and, the awareness of anxiety and how that works for people, you know, is coming a little bit more to the front. My own experience in this is that certainly primary school in England, there's very little awareness and certainly no support for it. And then when you get to secondary school, there is a bit more support, right? There are, you know, sort of like counselors that you can talk to, you know, school counselors. Yeah. But in primary school, weirdly enough, there isn't that at all. You know, primary school doesn't actually have any kind of like mental support network for kids yet. And I think maybe they think, oh, well, teenagers, they need a bit more mental support. And therefore, you know, there is a bit more of that. And I was wondering, Evie, you know, throughout your time, and you talked a little bit about, you know, having to go to hospital and, you know, obviously, you know, yeah, with your knee and with other things. Can you talk a little bit about some of the treatments that you've tried, you know, kind of like things that worked and what didn't?
Yeah, of course. So there was many. I have tried a lot of different things. So the first was probably CAMHS, which is the Child Mental Health Service part of the NHS. So it's a free service, which is great. And I love that it is free and that it's available. But unfortunately, I never found the right CBT practitioner, which is what I was offered to really connect to as a child. Like when I was a young child in school, there was never that kind of relationship that was built. And I would say they never really spoke to me. They liked to speak to my mother a lot, which was hard because I wanted them to speak to me. I wanted them to kind of help me, but really they were more helping my mother parent, which I really don't think she needed. I was the one that needed the help, not her. So it was difficult because I really just wanted them to maybe do something with the school, create some kind of system that would make it easier for me to attend the school, but it never really seemed to be put into place. And so, yeah, eventually I left school because there was no help getting put into place. And when I became homeschooled, I at first was really happy, but then had, I think, a bit of a delayed kind of anxiety response because just one random trigger really threw me one day and I had a massive panic attack, and then it completely shut down this happiness that I was building towards. And every day just got so much harder. My sleep, especially at this time, was horrendous. It would take me hours upon hours to get to sleep, and it would be routine after routine of just repeating the same things to try and kind of make my mind quiet, but nothing would really work. I remember as a child, I'd describe it as a business meeting going on in my head. I used to say that there's just too many people talking at once. No one's making any points and it's confusing, but they're all shouting. They're all having a go at each other for no apparent reason. And so, as you can imagine, it was very hard to shut off with all these loud thoughts in my head. So eventually I got a new CBT practitioner, and I have to say she was incredible. She got through to me. Around this time, I also wasn't leaving the house. I was struggling to eat. Nothing was really, my full body was kind of in a shutdown. And so,
how old were you at this point?
I was 9.
9, okay.
So at this point, this CBT practitioner, who was a part of CAMHS, she She came to my house, which was really lovely because every time I tried to leave to go to a therapy space, it would send me off in a, like, I would, the worst panic you could imagine from a child. It wouldn't be nice at all. And so she was like, it's okay, I'll come to you. And it took a while for, I also had quite bad social anxiety at this time. So I wouldn't even be able to speak to her. I would be sat in my bedroom, but sometimes she would just sit outside the bedroom door and just talk to me because she knew I wouldn't be able to come out. And we just built this relationship, which I think is the key to all of this, is building that relationship with someone that you feel you can trust. So yeah, I would say building that relationship is great.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. We'll go, you know, into a little bit more detail in a moment. And it's really good to hear your insights. It's certainly triggering a lot for me as well. My own daughter, you know, struggles from anxiety as well. And I've gone through the CAMS route with her. And we've now found more of a private CBT therapist that she's finally, you know, really connecting with, and it's really helping her. And similar, you know, to you, like for her, it started into COVID as well, and she would be off screen rather than on screen.
Yeah,
it's great to hear your insights, and we'll get into more of the conversation after this commercial break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a People and Plant Dialogue, hosted by Sophie.Health and UK Health Radio. Just before the break, you heard from our guest, Evie, talk about some of the treatments she tried to help her with her anxiety along the way.
Evie, I think we've all learned a lot so far, and it's been really interesting opening up the conversation to understand. So, for example, I didn't understand that Vincent has a daughter with some anxiety problems. You know, because I've spoken to you about it, that my son is also going through actually an intervention at primary school. So I can say there are some around. And it's, I told you before that I've already learned so much from you. Can you talk a little bit about a bit more, we started before the break, about your experience of the practitioners that came your way, the conversations you wish they'd had, you know, someone that stood out as being a real help to you. You talked about that practitioner who would visit you at home and that was really helpful. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so the same lady who would come to my house, we created a kind of plan. I think she called it the ladder. And at this, at the beginning, I was at the very bottom. And she wanted to show me what the top of this ladder could look like, because even at the age of 9, I was in a very dark place. I was seeing little to no outlook on my future. And I was just tired, really, of everything. And I didn't want to really do it anymore. And so she was like, look, I can show you how things can be really amazing again. You tell me how you think we can get there and we will try it. And so I had these steps, she just even little baby steps, such as opening my bedroom door to see her. And there were probably hundreds of steps before I got to the top of the ladder. But just kind of having that visual aid, I think, as a child really helped, because I could just see every time I got up that ladder, just how I was getting that tiny bit closer. And it was really motivating, because I always knew there was something to look forward to, even if it was a tiny step up the ladder, it was something to get up to. And I mean, other practitioners that I met along the way, I had an amazing GP. I will say that he really stood up for me during my time at school, because the school, they really struggled to understand. They thought I was making up a lot of it, which was quite unfortunate, because I mean, as anyone with anxiety knows, it's very real. But the school liked to say that it wasn't, and that maybe I was doing it for attention or for something. But this GP, he really communicated them how real this anxiety was. And even though they couldn't help me, I'm hoping now that maybe they've learned something through me and they've seen the real effects of it. But yeah, I can really thank my GP for how he spoke to them. He also spoke to me very kind of adult-like, which was amazing, because through CAMHS especially, they spoke to me very, very young, especially my recent experiences with CAMHS, because unfortunately I did have another bit of a slip up when I was around 14 and I needed some professional help again. And so I attended CAMHS again, and they liked to speak to me as if I really was a young child. They did things such as like bring toys, and they were like, "Do you want to play with them?" And I was like, "No, I'm here to talk about how I'm feeling." So yeah, some very interesting experiences. And my main thing that I think would have been great is if from the get-go they just spoke to me like I was a human and like I was functioning, because I think these practitioners, they heard I was in such a low place and in such like an anxious mind that I wouldn't be functioning. But that's not true. You are still as intelligent, you are still as smart, it's just so hard. Like, life is just hard, but that doesn't make you childlike. It's very strange, this kind of perception that they placed upon me.
It almost makes me think, like, as you speak, Evie, about what the work you have to do to understand yourself and manage yourself,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like you are advanced in years to your physical age. Yeah. So I can imagine you as 9, you are having to work in a way that other children aren't having to work, mm-hmm. and understand yourself and manage yourself and to be spoken to, or at 14 to be handed a toy. You know, when you've become very self-aware, it's almost like you're the adult in the room.
Completely. Sometimes I did even feel like the adult, and I had to even ask them, is there a plan here? Like, should we set up something for me to do? Like,
wow.
Do you want me to do it? Like what do I need to bring the suggestions? Like, it wasn't great. And so unfortunately CAMHS didn't work for me in my I guess early teen years. And so eventually I tried a private CBT therapist, and she was absolutely incredible. I was in a really dark place at this time, and I was struggling with a lot. I think childhood related, just anxiety related, mood related, everything was kind of, it just sat upon me very heavily. And I don't even know how, but she really got through to me. I think she just spoke to me in such a human way, and she never kind of saw it as me being less than just because I was struggling. She spoke to me in a way that I could have just a conversation with her. She wasn't speaking down to me. It was just me and a friend. We were just having a conversation, but she was just a very helpful friend, and she just got through to me on a whole different basis. And she's really the reason that I'm here alongside myself, of course, but yeah, together it was really great.
And Kaveh, during this time, right, you know, as a parent, there must have been quite a few frustrations, you know, in this journey, and you know what, I can imagine that, you know, from what Evie's saying, you know, a great GP, difficulties with school understanding, you know, CAMHS, you know, sometimes not connecting, you know, I mean, who gives a toy to a 14-year-old anyway? But, you know, yeah, like, just drawing from my own experience as well, like, were there times or certain people that you wanted that they would be able to speak to each other, right, to help them understand what was really going on? Can you talk a little bit about those kind of like frustrations that you might have suffered?
Yeah, I mean, two things. The disconnect was unbelievable. The degree of lack of understanding between the stakeholders in Peanut's narrative, in Evie's story, were unbelievable. The fact that, you know, it didn't seem like outcome focused. If the outcome was to get a little girl back to school or back on her feet, everybody kind of had their piece, whether they were doing it great or not. And they were kind of muddling their way through it. And the only one left connecting the dots was Peanut, was Evie, between these different. And I don't ever question they were well intentioned, but I mean, were they all very helpful? I don't know. It seemed like the most incredible game of trial and error. And as you play this game, you have the greatest exposure, which is only when you are a parent, you understand as the health of your child. And you have the least influence because these stakeholders seem to be so disjointed. And at one stage, do you think, well, do you just leave the system and figure it out on your own and figure it out with Evie's help? Do you rely on the system? Which bits of the system can you rely on? And when do you decide this just isn't going to respond? For me, when Evie, you know, Evie was in every kind of schooling, I think, that was possible. I think we literally tried village, town, private, all girls, public. I mean, we basically like tried everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the only consistent theme was it wasn't good enough. And it wasn't good enough, like it wasn't good enough for Evie. It was just not equipped at the time to handle the individuality or the care that, you know, or the mental crutches that Evie needed. They were busy giving her physical crutches. And it was just disappointing would be a British understatement. And I guess I've lived here for 23 years, so I could borrow a little bit from the understatements of the British. But yes, it left more to be desired. And so we kind of pieced it together. And Evie's mommy was amazing in this. And Evie was incredibly brave in this. I was entirely useless in this. And we, the three of us, with the help of her sister and her family, tried to figure it out. But you think how many families must be trying to figure this out on their own. And you think about how many professionals are supposed to be dedicated in this area. I have no doubt there is millions of professionals who do an excellent job. We just didn't have the fortune of meeting many of them along the way. And I would say that was surprising, disappointing, but also entirely rejuvenating because you had to take ownership for it. At the end of the day, you had to lean forward and take ownership for it. And if lack of reliance on the system means you got to lean forward and take ownership for it, well, what a fertile ground to start a project like Sophie. So for us, that idea of leaning back and make it better, doctor, just never worked. It never worked for Peanut. So we had to think of it in a different way.
Yeah, I would say if I had something like Sophie, it would have been so nice because at this point, I realized that I had to take it into my own hands. I wasn't finding the right professional. I knew that it would have to come from me more than anyone else. And I think just a little something, a cute little pod to help me along the way would have been so nice. Would have been so great.
And, you know, your journey, Evie, you know, it's clearly inspired you to be kind of like an advocate for others. Right. I hear you've already done this at school or college, and you know, you're now helping us as well with Sophie. Like, what does it mean for you to be able to help? What changes would you really like to see that could really help others?
I mean, it genuinely means the world. I think it's my main life goal is to, it really has always been, I'm a very moral person, I would say. I stand up very strongly for what I believe is right, and I don't really let others tell me what that should be. Like, if
right, that does also include her daddy on a regular basis. I should just highlight that as well.
Yes, it does. So yeah, I want to be the voice for the voiceless, really. I knew little me had no one to stand up for her other than like my parents, my mum. She was the only one. Like, I was the only one that knew me, and no one was helping me, no one was speaking for me, and I found that no one could connect with me, and it was so alienating. Like, I felt so incredibly alone, and I really thought I was probably the only one in the world, because I was seeing kids at school and I was like, oh, this is what a child is, and I'm not that, so there must be something very wrong with me. But there's nothing the doctors are saying is wrong with me, because they don't classify anxiety, and it's not, anxiety isn't, there's something wrong with you. But yeah, it was, I just needed kind of someone to speak on my behalf, just to be like, it's okay. It's okay to feel anxious. You're not strange. You're not weird. You're not different from everyone else. You have this extra thing, this extra gift, as someone I knew in my life liked to call it. She called it my gifts, and she was like, it's just something that you learn to live alongside. It just becomes a part of you. You don't feel ashamed of it anymore. It's just something that you like to live with. And that is one thing I really want to communicate towards others, because it's, no one says that it's okay. Everyone is always trying to find a fix for anxiety, which is great. And like, if you have to not live with it, perfect. If we can get rid of it, that's great. But I think it also needs to be said that it's okay. It's okay to live with it, and it's okay to not have an instant fix, because really an instant fix is impossible. So just stay where you are. Don't panic that nothing is getting better instantly. And just, yeah, I want to be able to say that to people. And really, why I'm studying right now, I'm studying psychology and biology at my A levels, just so I can get even more educated and use my own life experience to become who I wanted when I was a child. I really want to be the person that I wanted to get help from. I want to find that little person that I see myself in, and I want to stop them from falling all the way down like I did. And I want to be the person that they can lean on.
Amazing. Just such an inspiration. You can, yeah, now I have no doubt you're going to do it. Absolutely none. Cave, any final words from you before we go to the commercial break?
I don't think I can follow that up with any final words. I think that would have been the longest silence on our program, other than to say, you know, there will be parents who will be listening to this, and it's important to know you have an expert always in the room on the problem. And that expert happens to be the little person in the room. And it might not make sense, and it might go against all of your instincts, but if you give them just a little bit more trust, and if you just give them a little bit more space, and if you just listen a little bit more to them, they might nudge you in the right direction. It certainly worked in our case, although you can imagine Evie doesn't just gently nudge, she kind of does it.
Fantastic. Evie, thank you so much for allowing us to feature you in today's program. Please don't leave us, because we have a few more things coming up, and we're just so happy that you're going to be part of the program every week going forward. I think we're going to have a lot of fun over the next 6 months, and you're going to be able to be that amazing advocate, because you'll be the voice of the pioneers. So we'll be back after this commercial break with our regular Herbal Hero, our community moment of the week from Vincent, and of course Cave's inspiration of the week. So come back and join us after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plant dialogue hosted by Sophie.health on UK Health Radio. Well, I'm not really sure that we're equipped to say anything much after Evie's fantastic interview before the break, but I'm going to try. And now it's time for the Herbal Hero of the Week. So last week I talked to you about valerian, and this week I've chosen passiflora or passion flower, which is the second plant that we put through our Pioneer program because it has a special affinity to helping with sleep, and is traditionally used to reduce anxiety. So a lot of people in the UK and the US, you'll be used to seeing these amazing flowers for sale in your local garden centre. There's so many varieties, loads of them are bred for their really beautiful flowers. And then, of course, there is the delicious passion fruit, which does come from the same plant, which not everybody brings those two things together. So the fruit is usually coming from the species Passiflora edulis, variety rather, and other passiflora plants, they do produce fruit, but maybe they're not quite so tasty or juicy. So the ones you get in the garden centre tend to be bred for the beautiful flowers. And the ones you see in the supermarket will be from a different, but still from the same species of plant. First used, we know, by Native American people in the, way back through their oral tradition as a sedative. And it became popularized around the 16th century. It moved its way across to Europe and we started using it in European folk medicine, still used by medical herbalists like myself today by the liter. I have to say it's one of the most popular plants in my dispensary, and it's used for its ability to just calm anxious thoughts and also to encourage a more restful sleep. Now, a lot of people ask me if it's an aphrodisiac because of the name. And to be honest with you, they can be a little bit shy about having it in their mix. I wish you could see my co-presenters' faces right now because they don't quite know where I'm going with this. Fear not, gentlemen, and fear not, Evie. The name actually comes from the fact that the amazing flower, the really intricate petals and sepals, they're thought in number to be linked to the story of Christ's death and crucifixion, which is also known as the Passion. So actually, the name Passion Flower, Passiflora, comes from that and nothing else. So need not be embarrassed. I find it really, really useful where the normal pattern of sleep has been lost. So maybe that's because you've changed time zone, you've changed shift work pattern, those kind of things, where there's kind of nervous excitability is starting to interrupt you. You're not getting into a really deep sleep. So it's the herb I would reach for when someone's anxiety levels are beginning to creep up. But it's not the overpowering thing that's troubling them, but those creeping anxiety levels are starting to impact their sleep. That's when I, in my clinic, would reach for Passiflora. Or like I said, when people have lost the rhythm of their night's sleep and they're maybe starting to move towards some mild insomnia. So when Sophie first started out with a scientific literature review of hundreds of papers, what the scientists reading those papers found was that Passiflora has an effect on both GABA and serotonin neurotransmitters, which are very much involved in the regulation of anxiety and sleep. So if you don't produce enough of those, or if they're being the reuptake is too quick, then you can find that you don't have enough to stay calm and to be able to regulate your sleep. And I have to say that I absolutely love it when the science catches up with the traditional use, because that's what we've been using it for hundreds and hundreds of years. So that's always good to know. A bit like valerian that I spoke about last week. But for me, when I think of herbs, I think of them as having different personalities. Some people say, how do you remember all these things about these different plants? And what I would say is that, you know, you remember the personality of hundreds of people. The plants are a little bit like that for me. So where valerian is kind of, valerian sits you down in the chair and is really hard to ignore. Passiflora is lighter somehow. It kind of creeps up on you and you kind of don't know it's there. And then you're feeling a little bit better, and it's all quite subtle, which is interesting because, of course, it's a creeping vine and it has that lightness about its physical presence as well. So definitely a stalwart in my dispensary and one that the pioneers in our community have enjoyed trying too. So, Kaveh, what's your Sophie inspiration for the week?
You know, last week I was talking about that, I think the Sophie time machine, if I remember right, which was all this impact we were beginning to see from just journaling before using the plant. But before I talk about inspiration or technology, I want to ask you, because clearly I myself, I'm a pioneer in our programs, and I took passive flora. Mm-hmm. And I had some crazy vivid dreams. So what was that all about, Pamela?
Yeah, so this is something that we know can happen with passiflora. Even some people report it with eating the fruit, that they can have some really vivid dreams. Now, I have to say, before working with Sophie, I knew about this as a possibility in the literature. I never came across it in clinic or with any of the people I work with. So it was almost like bringing to life something that I knew was possible, but I'd never seen it, probably to do with the number of people in the community, but also maybe to do with the way that our plant extracts are working. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Of course. Yeah, it wasn't so much that the dreams were totally odd. It was just that it was like watching them in high definition.
I've heard that, yeah.
Which was very strange. Look, last week I talked about technology, and I thought, let's talk about purpose this time. And it seems very apt after listening to our lovely Peanut talking about her life earlier on the show. And I guess a little bit about this sort of chronic conditions that are on the rise. And another observation which may be related to it, but the fact that as society, we're having more of these generational shocks, but faster and faster and faster. So you think about like a century ago, maybe a world war and then a break and then maybe, but you know, now we have COVID and then we have a war and then we have what's on the news. There's this continuous flow of never-ending shocks. And I don't know what the end result of that is, if you're supposed to become numb to it somehow as a sort of a self-defense mechanism. But one of the things that I've found, and the name of this program is dialogue, that there's an increasing need for dialogue. And that increasing need for dialogue has never been more important, not just between people and plants, but people and people. And not just between a parent and a daughter, but people and people. And I think it's about these dialogue, which is so important because it must help us understand that there is always more than one perspective that we can observe. And if we can have empathy to that additional perspective, we might just find some truth that could change our lives. And I think at Sophie, you know, we've been talking about people, plants, and planets. That's at least that's what's been inspiring the team. Of course, now we found out there's a fourth P in that, in Peanut. But, you know, we love the letter P. But one of the things that has always glued this incredible team together has been dialogue. And so the moment of inspiration I want to add in today's conversation is the moment that I decided to do exactly what Pamela told me she was uncomfortable to do. And this is what we love at Sophie. We've been doing these amazing trials with plants, and each of these trials we've been doing for a month. And, you know, people are just not patient, you know. What if they don't stick around for 3 months to find out which plant works for them? You know, what if we're like, what if they want an answer now? Okay, we can't give it to them now, but what if we could give it to them faster? And so Pamela and I had a conversation, and I said, Pamela, do you think we could possibly do this faster? To which Pamela rightly said, absolutely not. Now, what we love at Sophie is that we always have dialogue, even when we fundamentally do different things. Because why? Because probably there's a lot of truth in what Pamela says. We just want to see if the alternative is possible. So our moment of inspiration today is to dialogue with people that we disagree with. And in this case, it's how we discover new things. It's how we test new things. And in Sophie, our upcoming pioneers are going to try something we haven't tried before, which is to rapidly go through three different plans. Rapidly, okay, not like overnight, but, you know, 10 days rather than a month. And we're going to see if we can generate a signal of effect. But what I love about that is I can listen to Pamela. I can listen to the wisdom that she has in what she does. And I don't have experience to the contrary. We can do that, and we can fundamentally disagree on approach, but we can find a way to support each other on our completely different perspectives, and possibly in the process discover something new to both of us. I think if we were more comfortable with the idea of having dialogue, particularly with people we disagree with, we might just find that we might have the power to change not just people, planets, and how we feel, but the reality around us in significant and profound ways. And I think that is Sophie's moment of inspiration for me, how to beautifully disagree with your fellow colleagues and build something of incredible outcome and impact. So thank you, Pamela.
You're welcome. I am
very grateful for your
I think my last word on it was, I don't like it, but I'm willing to be proven wrong. And that's important too. Vincent, your community moment of the week. What did you love going on in our lovely Pioneer community this week?
Yeah, well, before we get to that, it was interesting because obviously, you know, while working on Sophie, I knew that Passiflora was coming up as one of the trials, and I was struggling with sleep, and so I thought, I know what to do. I'm going to go to the supermarket and buy myself a couple of cartons of Passiflora juice. Maybe it'll work, right?
Oh.
So I did, and I drank myself silly with passion flower juice, and yeah, nothing happened. The concentration of our formulations definitely affected me. I also had the really vivid dreams. But I was also very fortunate that a few weeks back, I went to Brazil, to the Amazon. And there I had pure passion fruit juice, so completely fresh. And I tell you, if you drink enough of that, you definitely get very sleepy and have some very beautiful dreams. So, you know, it's not something that we here could do simply because, you know, you need so many passion fruits and it's very expensive. But there it was cheap and, you know, they just pick them out of the jungle. So anyway, in terms of the community thing of the week, the community moment, Girl Interrupted, that's her username, posted something asking for tension tips, right? She was feeling tense, you know, tense in her body, in her neck, you know, tension headaches, that kind of thing. And she was asking the rest of the community, it's like, you know, does anyone have any tips for that? And so there would be really nice conversation started. There, you know, to start off with, yes, you know, there was quite a bit of discussion around, say, yoga, doing stretches, Pilates, meditation, which, you know, I definitely agree with are all, you know, very helpful things. However, the conversation then kind of like shifted to actually something that Kaveh just mentioned in terms of news and limiting yourself around, you know, absorbing news. So what are the right and the wrong times to actually, you know, view news? Right. And, it, you know, yeah, a lot of people said, you know, yeah, I kind of like, you know, purposefully don't watch news in the evening because it affects my sleep. You know, I am interested in the news, but I do that specifically in the morning just so, you know, it dissipates throughout the day. And some people are avoiding it altogether. And so Oliver, another one of our community members, said, you know, it was all about finding the right balance between keeping up with the current events to stay informed without overexposure. That then also led into, conversations around, a couple of, not to do gaming or social media right before you go to sleep. Ms. TQ, another one of our members basically said, I've deleted social media altogether. Really avoiding that. My last one for myself was more around, Yeah, reading books before you go to sleep. I find that the story continues in my dreams if I do that. So they're very light books, you know, all fluffy stuff, but just, you know, enjoyable stuff. So that was a great little conversation in the community that was happening.
Thanks so much, Vincent. So next week on the show, we're really excited that we're going to be interviewing Dr. Stephen Dahmer, who's an integrative physician based in New York and a longtime friend of Sophie. We can't wait to have you on the show, Stephen. I hope that you're able to listen into this to hear about your experience of working with plants and other interventions, non-chemical interventions in your surgery. We'll have Evie with us for her first week as the voice of the Pioneer community. More herbs from me, community moments from Vincent, and of course, inspiration from Caveh. A quick reminder of the special portal we've created just for UK HR listeners to join us. It's join.sophie.health/radio. And the discount code, if you decide to take part, is Radio50. That's Radio50. So we look forward to being with you next week for the live show on Monday at 3 o'clock UK time. Until then, take care.